Okay, let's begin tonight. Exodus chapter 1, right where we left off last week, verse 13 and 14, it talks about the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and so on. So we're going to start with, could you just hold on to that, and then if somebody else comes in, pass it to you. Chapter 1, verse 15. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of the one was Shipporah, and the name of the other Puah. Now, I don't have that in my notes. I looked them up last week, and we never got to it. But the meanings are significant, I thought. And he said, when you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women, and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God. Now, it doesn't matter if you're actually considered God's people, or even if you're not, the Lord can be Lord in a way that you can fear him, and that's what they did, and the Lord looked down upon them favorably. So the midwives feared God, and they did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. So in this instance, disobedience can be a goodly thing, or a godly thing, actually, because they did it in fear of God. So there is, in this earth, there are governments, there are, rules and laws of governments. For example, the king here, he made a decree. He's telling them, same thing as a decree, this is what you're going to do. But they obeyed the higher law. They obeyed the law of God, even though the law per se wasn't given till much later here. Still in their hearts, their conscience, they knew that this thing was not right. And it says here that they feared God. They didn't do what the king of Egypt said. And so they looked in another direction. They looked to the Lord. Now in Joshua, turn to Joshua chapter 2. And because this is very similar, Joshua 2 verse 2. Now it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country. So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all of our country. Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as at the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men when I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. So in this instance, Rahab actually lies to the king of Jericho. Now, in the context, you would say, you shouldn't lie. And that's true. You don't normally lie. But as it was with the midwives, there is a higher power to which they are accountable to. And if you go back, in Joshua, you see that later on in the next chapter or so, that whenever they come into Jericho and they invade Jericho, that they didn't go in and kill Rahab and her household. Remember she hung the scarlet, the thread, the rope, and that was a sign that they would not go in and kill her and her family. So her being obedient to the higher power, honestly cost her, but it did in a way, cost her what she knew. She cost her her old life, so to speak. But what happened was she was spared and she moved into another relationship she never knew even existed. And you know that Rahab was in the lineage of Christ. If you look at the genealogy, it's amazing that God takes a Gentile and puts it just like Ruth, Boaz and Ruth. So here in Exodus chapter 1, this is the same basic thing. There was a higher authority to which the Hebrew midwives came under submission to, and that was to the Lord. And the hand of the Lord is upon Israel in multiplying them, even though the Egyptians are pressing them and the Egyptians are trying to stifle them, still the hand of the Lord is upon them and they keep on multiplying and multiplying and multiplying. So verse 18, so the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing and saved the male children alive? And remember, the answer that they're giving here is not factually true, but it's true that they are to be in submission to the higher authority, which is God. And the midwife said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwives come to them. Therefore, God, because they said this, and it's not that God rewarded them because they lied. God rewarded them because, and I want to point this out because people, you know, look to this scripture and the one dealing with Jericho and Joshua, and they say, well, you know, they lied. What's the deal here? It's that they were subject to a higher authority. And because of that, verse 20, therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and grew very mighty. And I'll read this from two translations, verse 21. And so it was because the midwives feared God. See, that's the higher authority. That's why. That he provided, God provided households for them. And the NIV says, and because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. So the Egyptians now are trying to snuff out or to extinguish the Israelites. But God continues to increase them anyway. And as I see it, you know, there's always parallels in the scriptures. You know, when you come to the Lord, sometimes the people of your own family try to discourage you. They try to keep you from continuing in the gospel. They try to stop you from going to church. They try to keep you from reading the Bible. All these other things. And the more that resistance comes many times, the stronger the person becomes, and they say, I'm going to serve the Lord, I'm going to walk with the Lord, I'm going to go this way, I'm going to read the Bible, I'm going to go to church, I'm going to remain a Christian, no matter what. And they increase, even though others are trying to push them down, to cover the light and all that. And so even when we read scriptures in the Old Testament, these things are for our admonition, that we can draw examples from them. And if we're attuned to the Lord, or if as we're moving along in our life, he can show us something from the Old Testament and show us how that can apply to us or has applied to us in our lives. I remember years ago when I first became a Christian, you know, I didn't know anything about anything, and I didn't actually understand anything about the Bible, was not, you know, with anyone that was a Christian at that time, didn't even know where to go to find a Christian church. I was just like, it's a miracle that God took me from where I was and led me along. But I remember that I would read the scriptures, the Lord would do things in my life, and I would read the scripture and I would say, hey, that's happened in my life. Even things from the Old Testament. And I was really excited about it, knowing that, and I knew I was going in the right way because the Lord had touched my life and caused me to walk a certain way. You know, even today in, you know, the 21st century, or in, back then it was 20th century for me, that the Lord was doing certain things. And then I'm reading in the scriptures and some of the very things he did, I didn't even know were in the Bible. I found out later, there it is right there. So our not understanding things is not a hindrance to the Lord. See, he can do things in our life even if we don't understand. And many times when we're in circumstances or, you know, whatever, we don't understand really what's going on in it. But maybe later on, our eyes are open and we see, and he teaches us. Now in verse 21, well, let me just read one verse. This is, well, actually more than one verse in Acts, still related to this thought that, you know, the Egyptians are trying to extinguish the people, the Israelites, because of fear. They're afraid that they're going to grow into a mightier nation than them and take them over, become friends with their enemies and then destroy them, although that was not even in their heart, but that was motivated by fear. So even though that was the case, God still increased the people. And I like here in Acts 5, let me read this. When they heard this, they were furious and plotted to kill them. This is the disciples. Because remember, they were preaching the gospel and so on. Then one in the council stood up, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a teacher of the law, held in respect by all the people, and commanded them to put the apostles outside for a little while. He wants to talk to all the Jews that are trying to persecute the disciples. And he said to them, "Men of Israel, take heed to yourselves what you intend to do regarding these men." And this is tremendous wisdom. "For some time ago, Thaddeus rose up, claiming to be someone. A number of men, about 400, joined him. He was slain, and all who obeyed him were scattered and came to nothing. After this man, Judas of Galilee rose up in the days of the census and drew away many people after him. He also perished, and all who obeyed him were dispersed. And now I say to you, keep away from these men and let them alone. For if this plan or this work is of men, it will come to nothing. But if it is of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest you even be found to fight against God." And so when the Lord is moving in something, usually there's some type of resistance from whomever, people, whatever. But if it's of God, it cannot be overthrown. It'll go forth. And that same thought rings true here in Exodus, that even though the people and the might of the king of Egypt is set against the Israelites, set against them, trying to literally kill them so that they can't grow any longer, kill all the male children. Even though all that power is against them, still it doesn't become effective. And I'm reminded of a verse, I think it's either in Romans or Corinthians, where it says, I think it's in Corinthians, that if God be for us, who can be against us? Now think about that. If God be for us, who can be against us? Well, a lot of people can be against you, right? People can be against you. But actually, who can be against you and succeed if God be for you? See, no one. No one. So back in Exodus 1, verse 22, "So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, 'Every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive.'" So he continues down this path. He continues to say the same thing. And God is going to use this to bring about good. Now, it's hard to think. It's hard to comprehend. Even in our lives today, when we experience something that is we feel is negative, or it very well may be a very bad circumstance, it's hard for us to understand that if we love God, or we're dedicated to Him, that all things work together for good to those who are dedicated or who love God. Now, in the short term, we may not believe that, because we have our eyes on the circumstance instead of on the Lord. Either His word is true or it's not, and I believe it's true. And I know in my own life, there were things I went through, and at the time I was a Christian, and I said, "Lord, how are you going to work this for my good?" And I said, "But I do believe that you will. I believe your word." And some years later, though, even as I was going through certain things, I could see what the Lord was doing in my life. But some years later, looking back on the circumstance, I can honestly say that God can work all things for good. And that's pertaining to your life, the circumstances, the things you experience. Not everything we experience is per se good. You know, we can have certain things that in a circumstance that is actually bad, but God can take that and turn it around for our good. It's very, very, it doesn't make sense, does it? Now, a lot of things in the Bible don't make sense to our mind. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't use our mind, you know. God's given us a mind. We should use it. But what it does mean is that faith and certain aspects of the gospel, when you think about it and you try to reason it out, it's not going to make sense. But if you believe it, as you walk through it, you will understand. You know, like people say, I've heard people say this and say that one individual said to me years ago, he said, you know, I'll believe if I see. And that's the direct opposite of what the Bible says. It says, if you believe, you know, then you'll see. Not, you know, if I see, I believe. Well, Thomas said, you know, I'm not going to believe unless I see, you know, put my fingers into his side and into his hands. And she said, here, go ahead, do it. And now he believed. And so that thing, that's why they term him Doubting Thomas, but that thing was turned around in his heart. And he says, my Lord and my God, Jesus. He knew. And so, you know, faith will bring things into focus afterward, later on. Chapter 2. Now we're going to deal with the birth of Moses. And a man of the house of Levi went and took as wife a daughter of Levi. Now, who can tell me anything about Levi? Anything? Tell me something about Levi. Who is Levi? What do we see in the Bible about the Levites?
They were set apart.
Yes, what were they set apart to do?
Service in the temple.
To serve the high priest and the other priests and so on. And actually, the priestly line, all of them came from the Levites in the Old Testament here. So the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. Now, why is she hiding him? She's hiding him because the king of Egypt wants all the firstborn, not the firstborn, but all the men children killed, because he doesn't want the Israelites, all of them, to grow, you know, as a nation. He doesn't want them to grow at all anymore. So she hides him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark, and we know this. Now, in verse 2, in I think it's the King James, it says that Moses is a baby. He was a goodly, and the word goodly child means pleasant to the senses. The New American Standard says he was a beautiful child, and the Living Bible says he was an unusually beautiful baby. You have two Levites coming together, the father and mother of the man we know as Moses. Now, we're all familiar with Moses. His mother, and we're going to read this, she hides him 3 months. When she can no longer hide him, she puts him in a basket on the river. Then Pharaoh's servant finds him. We'll read it in a few minutes. And then Pharaoh's daughter sends her to find the mother, and the mother comes to feed her own child. And so even though the mother is not portrayed in the scripture, who can tell me the name of Moses' mother?
Jacob.
Yes. Who can tell me Moses' father's name? That's a little harder, right? Well, he had something to do with this too, you know. And I just don't mean producing a baby. I'm saying that he was there consenting to what the wife did. Maybe he even suggested it to her. Who knows? But here you have two relatively unknowns who God is going to use to bring forth the deliverer of the Israelite people. Despise not the day of small beginnings. You never know when a person, for example, in the church, you don't know what's going to happen to some of these younger people. I mean, there can be, whoever thought when they were the Sunday school teacher, when they were teaching Billy Graham, whoever thought that Billy Graham was going to, you know, from a small church, was going to be this world-renowned evangelist? You don't ever know. Or the one relative I have in her church, a young man grew up, and the Lord raised him up and used him. He's used all over the place for worship service. And he's very involved in music ministry, but mainly dealing with worship. I mean, who knows? You don't know. And even though he was a beautiful baby, I mean, there's a lot of babies that are beautiful. My daughter just had another beautiful baby. Here they are, they're looking at this little baby, and they don't see the potential there, do they? Who could see the potential in this little baby of actually going up to a mount and then coming back down with the commandments in stone, the Ten Commandments? Who would have thought of a little baby would be taken and trained, and God's going to use him? I don't mean trained by the Egyptians, that's true, but I mean trained by God. He's going to be used to deliver a million or two Jews from this, one of the strongest nations in the world at the time. The potential in that little baby. So what potential, and we have a very small church, too small of a church, but we have a small church. Who knows the potential that's there? We don't know. And potential is not necessarily defined as a person preaching the gospel. There's potential in other ways to reach people. So God preserves Moses for a purpose. So let's continue to read. So once you could no longer, verse 3, no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, dabbed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. Now, you think that was a coincidence? People say, well, what a coincidence. That wasn't a coincidence. And her maidens walked along the riverside. Now, that's interesting, too. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrew children. So the Lord touched the heart of Pharaoh's daughter in this instance to have compassion upon him. Now later on, when Moses grows, and whenever he severs his ties with Egypt, then those that had compassion on him early on and loved him early on no longer feel the same way about him. You know, whenever one takes a stand for the Lord, sometimes people do not feel the same way about you. I mean, they could love you and go out with you and have fun with you and do all kinds of things with you and enjoy your company. But when you come to Christ, now the same people that you spent all this time with, the same people that you grew up with, that you had your fellowship in the world with, sometimes, not that they aren't nice to you any longer, it's that they don't feel the same way about you because there's a separation. There's a separation between where you are as a Christian and where they are. They want to continue to go out and go to the bars and live in a riotous way. Now the Lord has changed you, and you're over here, and you can't do that anymore. You did it one time, and even found pleasure in it, but now it causes your heart to be saddened that they even do that. And you will not partake of something like that. So there's a separation, and even though religion or the Bible, none of that's mentioned, still they know that you no longer go the same way that they go. And I had some friends that, I mean, they respected my decision. They respected that, you know, I became a Christian. They respected that I read the Bible. But they were not interested in that and going that way. And even to this day, as far as I know, and they're in their mid-60s. And there's not been a change in their life. Those that love Moses later on are not going to love him anymore. So things will change. Verse 9, then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take the child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages. So his mother places him there in the river, not knowing what's going to happen. We can't really relate to having a death sentence placed upon someone we love. And they were powerless. I mean, they weren't a nation at the time. They couldn't fight back against the Egyptians. They were under their thumb, under their rule. And so the king says that all the male children are to die. And so there she is. She, you know, what am I going to do? She's powerless. There's certain things, you know, when you're a parent, that you become powerless in. You can't do anything. And you have to, so to speak, put your child on the river and just trust the Lord. And that's what she does. And the Lord worked on her behalf and in the life of Moses and brings him in instead of him being killed. I mean, even as Pharaoh's daughter, she is under submission to the authority of the king. And he could have said, no, no, I said that all of the children have to be killed. But see, the Lord was working. God was working in this. And he softened them enough. Remember that Pharaoh, and we'll see this later on, hardens his heart continually, doesn't he? Well, in this instance, different man. The Lord was able to at least not have him follow through and have this child killed. Now, I realize that the daughter has some sway, but, I mean, he could have done that. So in verse 10, and the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. Now, how hard would that be? Now, those of you who don't have children, I mean, you can't understand that. Here, she's feeding him till he gets old enough, maybe two or three, I don't know. Now she has to give her son away, not keep him. She's not keeping him. Now, as a mother, you want to keep your child. You want to keep them close. You want to get to know them, right? That's just a normal thing. But she has to do what she has to do, and she submits. She has no choice, and she trusts the Lord. And he's taken and given to Pharaoh's daughter, and he becomes her son in letter. So there he is. Remember what was told Esther in the book of Esther? Who knows whether you have come into the kingdom for a time like this? And Moses is come into the kingdom for a time like this to deliver the children of Israel. Who knows that you have come into the kingdom for a time like this that we're in? That maybe through your life, through your witness, that you may bring a person into the kingdom. You can bring a person to Christ. A person who maybe if you let them go, might end up dying 6 months from now. I remember years ago, I was only a Christian for a year and a half. And I was witnessing to this fellow I worked with. I told him about Jesus, and it was very end of the day we were leaving. He said, well, could we continue this discussion tomorrow? I said, yeah. I said, you want to meet before work? He said, yeah. I said, we started at 8. I said, why don't we meet out front like 7:30? He said, okay. So I drove to work early, sat out front. He came, got in my vehicle, and I started to tell him about Jesus and explain to him certain things from the scripture. I even had my little pocket New Testament there, and I showed him a few scriptures, let him read them. I said, would you like to receive Jesus Christ? He said, yes. So probably within the next week or two, I worked with him every day, but not always right next to him. I was in another area of the building. And I was over there talking to him. He says, you have no idea what you did. I'm thinking, did I do something wrong here? Did I give somebody a wrong part for their car? You know, what did I do wrong? And I said, what do you mean? He says, you have no idea what you did. I said, what's that? He said, the day we met, and I was working in McKees Rocks at the time. He said, the day we met, I planned, he's married and had two children. I planned on, he would drive across McKees Rocks Bridge. He lived over in Bellevue. He said, I planned on stopping my car on the bridge that day and jumping off the bridge. I couldn't believe it. So who knows? You have come into the kingdom for a time like this. That maybe one person you can help. You can pull them out of the fire. You can say something to help them, to bring them in, to change the direction of their life. And I honestly believe that if you would go into the church, this church, many churches, and, you know, we go to the jail, and mentioned this before, I said, you know, if the Lord has arrested you and brought you here, and he's done that to confine you now, because some of you may not be alive if the Lord didn't do that. And you should see some of them, they go like this, like they know that they would have been dead from drugs or a gunfight or whatever if the Lord didn't intervene and them get caught and end up in jail. So you don't know. You don't know. So in verse 10 here, and the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, because I drew him out of the water. So here, Pharaoh's daughter is the one who gives Moses his name. And it's the same as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, who can tell me what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's names are? Oh, Shadrach, Meshach? No, that's not. That is their Babylonian name. That was not their Hebrew name. Did you know that? Yeah, that's not the Hebrew name. So she names him Moses because she drew him out. That's what the word means. In actuality, his name is named because I believe the Lord was the one who drew him out. He was the one that touched her heart to have compassion on this child, and she draws him out. So the point is that God is in control. We don't think sometimes that God is in control, but he is. Moses is drawn out. That was done in the natural by Pharaoh's daughter. It was done by God for his purpose. And then there's a scripture here I want to read from Corinthians. Howbeit, that which was not first, which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterward, that which is spiritual. So you see, in the natural, he's drawn out. It's a natural thing. The natural's first. But later on, God's going to draw him out. Not out of the water. He's going to draw him out of Egypt and up to the mountain, and then he's going to see the spiritual. First is the natural, second is the spiritual. Now in verse 11, now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens. Now what was he seeing? Their hard labor. What exactly was Moses at this particular time focused upon? He was focused upon the burdens of the people. He was not focused upon God. So in order for him to be used by the Lord, the focus of his heart, the focus of his being, needs to be changed. And that's not an easy thing. See, we have a way of functioning in this natural world and in this natural body that we function that way, you know, all our natural life when we're children and as we grow up as adults. But now when we come to the Lord, no longer can we function a certain way. Now the Lord has to now teach us another way. And for him to teach us another way, that means that what we focus upon must change. If that does not change, we cannot see another way. We can't see certain ways the Lord is going to lead. So he looked upon their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating an Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, And when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and he hid him in the sand. He doesn't view the circumstances in the way that the Lord is seeing it. Now, the Lord, and we didn't read this yet, but the Lord sees what's going on. He sees the oppression by the Egyptians upon the Jews. And the Lord sees whenever we are mistreated, or actually when we mistreat others. Do you know that Christians mistreat other Christians? Do you know that? You know Christians say things about other Christians? Things they shouldn't say? And God sees all this stuff. Whether we're walking with Him and doing what is right, He sees that. Or we're walking with Him and we think, maybe we're religious. And we think that everything is fine. And we think it's okay. We can say this or say that. Or do this or do that. Well, I'm telling you what. God sees. So, you know what? I have said this, and I think it's wisdom that many times we need to just be quiet and not give our opinion. See, our opinion can be skewed. Do you know that? We don't always see things the way the Lord sees them. Here's the man Moses. Now, it's okay for Moses to see this way because he hasn't learned yet. He's young, and the Lord will give him grace, but hopefully we will learn, and we know that Moses learns. I mean, we all make mistakes, but are we going to learn something? Are we going to see it? Are we going to learn and then move on and mature and put certain things away? Now, I've been in a lot of different churches. Before I was involved with this church, I was probably in maybe four churches, different churches. And the one church I was there the longest, the Lord was trying to get me to the right place. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know anything. I didn't have any teaching. I didn't have any guidance. I didn't have anything. So I had to walk with the Lord, and He took me through certain things. And I was very, very surprised to know. I thought when a person became a Christian, they were perfect. Boy, was I in for a shock. You know, you get around a couple people, and they're talking about those people over there, those two or three, those people that are over there together, and I'm over here, and they're talking about them. Or when something took place in the church, and some of the leaders rose up and started these rumors in the church about the pastor, I could not believe it. I was like, is this what Christianity is about? Is this what churches are like? And I'm telling you, no church is immune to it. None of them. It depends on whether the individuals in the church will say, I am not going to talk about somebody the wrong way. Well, I'm just saying it because it's true. Well, it might be true, but you might need to just be quiet about it. And damage can take place in a church when people don't keep their mouths shut. Now, I don't know why I'm going into this, but it's true. So Moses here is seeing things one way, and the Lord has to change that, like He does with us. So he looked this way and looked that way, and he actually killed this Egyptian. And he puts him in the sand, buries him in the sand. In verse 13 through 15, God is going to use, remember, I said that all things can work together for good to those that love God. Now, if the person isn't loving God and dedicated to God, now I'm not saying that certain things should be done and said. I'm saying that we can learn from it and God can use certain things. Now, this circumstance here, what Moses did was wrong. He was not to deliver the people by his carnal ideas and his carnal flesh and actually in the natural killing the Egyptian. That's not the way to deliver. And he was mad and all that. But God is going to use this. So if in the heart the person really wants to serve the Lord and wants to do the right thing, you know, God can take that and turn it around and use it for good. Verse 13, and when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting, and he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" Then he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." And it was because, you know, they spread the news probably amongst themselves, and it got back to Pharaoh. Verse 15. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So even though he did this wrong thing, even though he was angry and he killed the person, remember, David killed Uriah the Hittite. It was the wrong thing to do. But David had a heart for God, and the Lord took him out of that depression in that whole area he was in, being separated from the Lord, and takes him out and cleanses him and continues to use him in a great way. So here Moses does this, and God is going to use this for his good, because for Moses to deliver the people, he cannot do it in his own self-strength. Now, he doesn't know that at this time. He's not aware of these things. But the Lord is, and so now he has this thing spread so that Moses can no longer stay there in Egypt, because he had no reason to leave. He had really nowhere to go. So now when this takes place, Moses is forced to flee or be killed by Pharaoh. So the Lord's going to take him now out. He's going to go into the wilderness. He's going to go. He doesn't know where he's going, but he goes out. And it says he goes to Midian, and I believe that Midian is, I think, over 600 miles from Egypt. So it's not like he went 10 miles or 20 miles. He went far away, because the arm of Egypt could stretch out pretty far. They had a lot of resources, a lot of people, a lot of warriors. So Moses just keeps on going. And finally, he stops here in this place, this well. And God's going to use this response that he had. He's going to work it for his purpose. Just like he did with the midwives. Just like Nebuchadnezzar places the three Hebrew children in the fiery furnace. God is going to use that for his purpose. Just like Daniel being thrown into the lion's den does not seem like a very good circumstance, but Daniel trusts God, and God is going to use that for his good. Not only will he build his faith, but now he's going to have a special audience with the one who threw him in. Just like Moses is going to eventually here have a special audience before the Lord and see things he never thought he would ever see, and experience things he never thought he would experience. Now, this whole situation with the Egyptian that he killed, he does that in self-effort. Self-effort, apart from the leading of the Spirit, will produce very, very little, if anything. Self-effort for a young Christian may be okay, but as we grow, that must change. You know, first the natural, second the spiritual. Eventually, we must come into another place. Eventually, we must be able to comprehend certain things, not with our mind necessarily, but perceive and comprehend things in our heart, in our spirit, that we will understand even in our mind. We could understand it. We'll see the logic of God. And the logic of God is many times different than the logic of the mind. Not always, but many times it's different. If you want to go up, you must go down. That's not logical. But there is a logic to it, spiritually speaking. Now, in Acts 7, this is a very interesting verse. And I was just reading this before class and saw something in here that I think is very interesting. And we'll kind of get ahead of ourselves, because we know all the main stories in Exodus, I believe. You know, with the Egyptians, you know, God dealing with the plagues, we'll look at all that. And we know the stories, but there's something here in this verse, Acts 7, that is, for me, very profound. It is a profound truth that I think we miss when we read this. In verse 22, this is dealing with Moses. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. So, remember, he's brought up in Pharaoh's house by Pharaoh's daughter. And he's going to go to the very best schools. He's going to be trained in all the different things, the wisdom of Egypt, in the schools and out of the schools. There were probably men that were there in the palace that were wise men in this world, and they were teaching Moses all the time, all these different things. And having natural wisdom in things is not bad, but it's not the wisdom of God either. The wisdom of God can see and perceive things far beyond the natural wisdom. That is why in Proverbs, Solomon encourage you to seek wisdom, seek understanding, you know, so that you can penetrate and see beyond, you know, this life, beyond this world, beyond our own little circumstances. Now, in this verse, look, and Moses was learned in all the wisdom of Egypt and was mighty in words and in deeds. Do you see that? Whenever God calls Moses, and he's going to send Moses to Pharaoh, what's the first thing he says? I can't talk. I can't do this. Acts, it says that he was mighty in words. And those words were the words of Egypt, the words of worldly wisdom. He could probably talk about that and expound on certain things. But now when it comes to the things of God, I can't talk. I can't do it. And that's really what the Lord wants. He wants a person that can't do it, so that God can make them able to do it, not in their own natural ability, but in some ability that God gives them to do it. Because if we had the ability to do it, why would we need God? So he brings to us something that is beyond our ability, so that we must depend upon the Lord. So this is what you're going to do. Well, I can't do that. It's not in me. I just cannot do it. Well, that's okay. That's fine. As long as we are able to surrender and say, okay, Lord, I can't do this, but I believe that, and I trust you that, you know, whatever needs to happen will happen, and I'll do it. And that's not an easy thing to do sometimes. But Moses was mighty in words. Mighty in words. He's not so mighty when the call of God comes. So Moses' failure to deliver the Israelites is because of self-effort. So the Lord has to deal with that. And that does not mean, I mean, if the Lord's going to use you, I always use this example, to go down to the soup kitchen. I mean, you physically have to make an effort to get up, to get dressed, to get in your car, and to drive down there to do that. Now, that's not necessarily self-effort. You understand what I'm saying? That you have to do certain things. But the actual functioning of what God calls you to do, you can step forth to do it, but there must be an ability that he builds something in you to be able to do it. Maybe I'm not even explaining myself right. Verse 25, still speaking of Moses. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they understood not. So the learning that he learned in Egypt got in the way, because he thought that they were going to understand that he was trained, he knew all these different things, and that the Lord was going to use him to deliver the children of Israel. And they didn't understand that. So the learning, you know, caused him to trust in himself. The learning and the wisdom of Egypt caused him to trust in himself. You understand that? You see that? Just like the wisdom of the world will cause the Christian to trust in themselves. That's why we need a change. We need to have the wisdom of God, not the wisdom of the world. Now, that's not to say that certain things, that we can't hear certain things and apply that will help. Now, in Hebrews, it says this, that Moses, he forsook by faith Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who was invisible. That seems to contradict what really happened, but that doesn't really. Moses leaves, and he doesn't know where he's going to go. And I believe in his heart he knew the Lord was going to raise him up to deliver the people. But he didn't know how to do that. He didn't know what to do. And so now, because he made this mistake, he has to flee Egypt. But it says here in Hebrews that by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. He just went. So I'm going to trust the Lord, I guess. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. There he goes. Now back in Exodus 2. So in a few verses, we went from Moses as a baby in a basket on the river to being a grown man, him leaving Egypt and going to Midian. All in a matter of a few verses here. Now let's go down to verse 23. Now it happened in the process of time. Well, what is the process of time here? The process of time that the king of Egypt died. Well, what's that? What's the process of time? It takes time for everything. It takes time to grow up. Physically, it takes time to grow up as a Christian. Everything takes time. But many times we don't want it to take time. We want things to happen overnight, don't we? We want things to happen quickly. In this one verse, now it happened in the process of time. It doesn't take very long to read that half a sentence. But that's dealing with 40 years there. 40 years. The process of time. This is another verse from Acts 7. And when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him, Moses, in the wilderness of Mount Sinai, an angel of the Lord in a flame of fire in a bush. So in the process of time, the Lord is going to reveal himself to this man. In the process of time, the Lord will reveal himself to you. He may do that. And of course, you're not going to see a burning bush. That I can guarantee. But he will reveal himself to you the way he does. Many times he reveals himself through his word. We read it, and something happens when we're reading it, and we start to see something other than just a story. We start to see something that's moving there, something that's spirit, something that's life, something that is quite different than we saw maybe before. You know, you can hear the story of Noah your whole life, and you can read the story. You can hear it told. And one time you can sit down and you can start to read it real slowly, and the Lord can start to reveal some truth there that is applicable to your life now. Not that you go out and buy a ton of animals, but I mean something other than that. You know, something else that's there he can reveal. Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Did he preach with his mouth, or did he preach with a hammer and nail building the ark? It doesn't say. So the Lord can reveal certain things to you in the process of time. And I believe that if we can walk with the Lord and be patient and just, you know, walk with the Lord and enjoy your life. Is it okay to say that? Do you know you can enjoy your life? You know you don't have to be down under all the time? You know that the Lord loves you? You know the Lord cares about you? You know everything's not negative? You know, you can start saying things that are good, things that are positive. You know, I got up today and, you know, went to work, and things maybe didn't go too well in the beginning, but that's okay. I'm going to get a nice paycheck at the end of the week. I'm going to help pay my bills. That's a great thing. I mean, there's always a good way to look at it. You get people that are always negative, look at everything negative. And have you ever been around somebody that looks at things positive? It's like refreshing sometimes. So don't always dwell on the negative. Find something positive to dwell on. When you come to church, don't dwell on the negative. Look for something good from the Lord. And in the process of time, the Lord can do something in your life beyond what you ever thought. Maybe he's done that already, but he's not finished. You know, you're still breathing. I think you're all still breathing, right? You still breathing back there? Good. So that means that it's possible that the Lord can do more in your life as you continue on, even though he did great things before. Look where the Lord's brought some of you. Think about it. In the process of time, he revealed himself to me. And I said, this can't be true. How can I grow up in the church and never hear the gospel? I don't know. Maybe because the Lord was waiting for the time where I could look back on certain things and see his hand in my life. Standing there, going to church, and one of my best friends was up front reading the epistle. And I was the very back of the church going, trying to make him laugh while he's reading the epistle. I mean, I was goofy. Maybe I still am. I have to ask my kids. Shaking her head, yeah. But that's what I would do. I mean, and I thought, that, you know, later on after I became a Christian, I said, what in the world? Why did I go to church? So, I mean, in the process of time, the Lord took me, the things that I did, and he said, okay, maybe the Lord laughed because he knew where I was going to be eventually. Said, well, let him have his fun now. And so there I grew up in the church, maybe because I was not paying attention to anything that was going on. Could be one of the reasons. But in the process of time, he revealed himself to me. I said, oh, the light went on. I said, wow, now I'm seeing some things here. And then, you know, he brought me into this serious place. I still have fun, though. Verse 24. So God heard the groanings, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and Jacob. And is anybody of the King James? Does it say have respect? God looked down on the children of Israel. I think it's verse 25. And God acknowledged them. I think in the King James, it says God had respect. And all that means is he considered them. He saw their suffering. He saw all they were going through. And the Lord considered them. He said, well, I'm going to call them my people. I'm going to draw them out. I'm going to take them out of Egypt. And then the NIV says this. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Well, that's nice. That's really nice. Now let's just look at a couple more things and we'll stop. Verse 1, chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Here he is, you know, the story about the Lord leads him to Midian. He's at the well. We didn't look at all that. Jethro's daughters come out to water the flocks and so on. So Moses is taken back to their father, and he dwells with them. He's there for some time. Here in verse 1, you see that Moses was tending the flock of Jethro. Now this plays a key role in the preparation of Moses. Who would ever think that tending sheep could play a role in a preparation of an individual? But remember that the Lord can teach you in any way, in any means. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You know that? I mean, here he is. I mean, how exciting is it tending sheep? They stink. They poop. You might step in it. They didn't have shoes like we did. I mean, it's not too exciting, if you know what I'm saying. But yet, the Lord is going to teach him in this setting. Now, who else was a shepherd in the Bible? David. And it says there that he learned how to lead them and guide them with his heart. He learned that by shepherding. When I was a young Christian, I had this friend that I worked with, and he was a real Italian. Well, not that I wasn't a real Italian, but I mean, he came over from Italy, his parents. And once in a while, I'd get together with him, you know, after work. I went over to his house. He lived about a half a mile from me, and talked with him. And here he was telling me when he was in Italy, he was a shepherd. And he was telling me things about shepherding. And I mean, I'd like to talk to him today about that. Back then, I didn't get as much out of it. But he would tell me how you have to deal with the sheep and how they would be fearful and how you had to, you know, comfort them and all these different things. I don't know if he put the two together. For a while, he was serving the Lord. So maybe the Lord was teaching him there. But in the natural, he learned certain things. Now, remember that Moses tried in the natural to deliver the children of Israel out. And it didn't work too well. But now the Lord is going to teach him spiritual truth through the shepherding that he's doing in the natural, that whole thing. So there's three main areas that we see in the preparation of Moses. One is he's prepared by the Lord in the court of Pharaoh for 40 years, and he's going to learn there how to govern, because he was probably grooming him to learn how to govern and, you know, to have some position of authority. So he's going to learn how to exercise authority. He's going to learn how to give directions. He's going to learn how to make decisions. All these different things. Moses learned when he was in school in Egypt. So that's one area of preparation, was the court of Moses. The second area of preparation is the desert of Midian. 40 years, he's going to be prepared by God. He's with God alone, and he's going to prepare him to deal with life, the realities of life. So, in actuality, Moses' life can be divided into three 40-year periods. Just want to just tell you that. 40 years in Egypt, in Pharaoh's palace, 40 years in Midian in the desert, and 40 years in the wilderness wandering. So three different areas. In verse 1, we just read, what is Moses doing at that time? He's doing the very, very thing that is the ordinary. He's doing the commonplace thing. You know, taking care of sheep. A lot of people there took care of sheep. He's doing a common job. He probably never thought that he'd be doing this common job. He probably thought he would be delivering the children of Israel. But God's ways are not our ways, and God's thoughts are not our thoughts. So until God's ways become Moses' ways, and until God's thoughts become Moses' thoughts, there's going to be difficulty. He's not going to be able to deliver the children of Israel as God wants him to do that. He has to go through the school that the Spirit of God is going to take him through, or he's not going to make it. He's not going to be able to do it. So the Lord is going to work in Moses, and he's going to take him into the desert, which he does. And he's going to take the rashness, and he's going to change that in him. He's going to take all the self-sufficiency out of Moses. He's going to take him and bring him to this meek place where he'll be able to hold certain things correctly that the Lord's going to show him, mainly when he shows him certain things up in the mount. And God is going to keep him there until Pharaoh's dead, until Moses is prepared. So there seems to be in the scripture, you see this with Paul. Remember Paul? He was Saul, you know, on the road to Damascus. He's converted, and he goes out into the wilderness. I believe it was 3 years. And he's learning, the Lord's teaching him different things. Now, he learned a lot before when he studied in the religion of the Pharisees. When he was a Pharisee, he learned the scriptures. He learned a lot of different things. But the Lord had to teach him and prepare him so that what he learned before could be of some benefit to him now. Some benefit. And now the third area of Moses' preparation is tending sheep, where he's going to be prepared to be able to tend or pastor people, or pasture, however you want to say it. He's going to be able to lead them, to feed them, to care for them, to manage them, to give them compassion, tenderness, to carry them, whatever is necessary. He's going to be the shepherd of this huge flock of sheep known as the children of Israel. And at one point, the burden is so much that his father-in-law says, this is too much for you. It is too much. You're taking too much upon yourself. All the burdens of all these people. He says, you need to assign people to deal with, judge the lesser things, and you judge the more important things. So pick you out 70 elders among the people. But nevertheless, God is training him and preparing him, you know, to be this deliverer of the children of Israel. It's not like the Lord's going to, you know, say, okay, now you're a Christian, you're a believer, now you can go and do the job. No, there has to be a time of training, a time of learning, a time of preparation, so that certain things are done correctly in the heart, in the life. So maybe when some sheep gives you a rough time, doesn't want to do what you want it to do, well, I'll go over and I'll kick it, and I'll grab it in a headlock and slam it on the ground and punch it in the face. No, he's going to learn that you have to be patient. You have to deal with certain sheep a certain way. You remember pictures of the shepherds? They grab some sheep and they throw them up over their shoulders and they grab their legs so they can't move, they can't get away, they can't go anywhere. They're going to learn to listen to his voice. They're nice and close. They're going to hear him. They're going to see and know that, you know, you don't have your freedom and I can take it away anytime I want and I'm going to carry you around here till you understand this. And so, you know, you have to deal with certain sheep certain ways. And this is all part of the preparation and the training of Moses. So there is all that, and then there is a time element that this is going to take place, 40 years. You would think that the Lord could do a quick work and get him back there in a year. The people were still suffering, you know. But the Lord, when he does something, he wants to do it right. When the Lord does something in your life, he wants to do it right. He wants you to cooperate and get the thing right so that you can be used by him in a correct way and in a good way. So Moses may have been in a rush in the beginning, but now he's understanding. God's in no hurry. Have you found that out yet? He's in no hurry when it comes to a lot of things. He's in no hurry to get you out of your circumstance. He's in no hurry sometimes to deliver you. Well, sometimes he does it quick, but a lot of times he just takes his good old time. Lord, why are you letting me squirm? Why do I have to squirm in this thing? Well, you need to learn, and you need to have something developed in here so that you can rest and be still. Whatever you want, Lord, it's fine with me. Did you ever say that to the Lord? And whatever you want, Lord, it's okay. But I'm okay. I'm okay with it. It's okay. So it's all right. We're only going to be here a little longer. It's okay. No problem. So there's things the Lord wants to do. You know, the old expression, get your ducks, all your ducks in a row. Well, so to speak, he gets his ducks in a row as far as you're concerned, your life. Get it all taken care of. Then in the process of time, when the time is right, then Moses is going to be sent back to Egypt to deliver the people. And he's going to know, because of the experience that he's had and the preparation, he's going to trust the Lord, and he's going to go in there with this single heart, and he's going to say, thus saith the Lord, let my people go. And then there's going to be the struggle of the spirit and the flesh. The spirit and the flesh. Just like there is today. The spirit and the flesh. And the struggle can get very intense. And the spirit and the flesh. Back and forth, back and forth. Moses continues on. It doesn't matter if there's resistance. He's going to continue on. And because he's learned some things. And if we walk with the Lord, we'll learn things. And we'll eventually come into certain things and we'll understand. And you know, we'll be okay.